Hello and welcome to Culture with me, Robert Bounds. Now, if you've been poking your nose into the arts and features sections of the world's newspapers over the past week, you'll have been hard-pressed to miss the opening of the impressive angular new wing of London's Tate Modern, called the Switch House. In fact, you might just now be fresh from the bookshelf after looking up the word ziggurat in the dictionary, for that is how many a commentator has described this new Tate Tower. On the show today, we'll be heading into the ziggurat itself to speak to curators and architects involved in the completion of the extension, which has been a long labour of love and brickwork.
The ultimate success of a building when it really becomes a lively place, a place for the people, very social, as you say, very accessible, and I think that's what the museum has to be nowadays.
Plus, I'll be joined by the art newspaper's Jane Morris to assess the success of the Tate and what this new wing means for the institution and the way we look at art itself. That's all ahead on today's episode of Culture with me, Robert Bound. Do stay tuned. Tate Modern first opened its doors in 2000 with a remit to create a space for international modern and contemporary art in London. After the concept was dreamt up in the early 90s, it saw Swiss architects Herzog and de Meuron transform the Bankside power station into one of London's best-loved art institutions and one of the world's leading tourist destinations too. During its 16 years of existence, Tate Modern has seen over 40 million visitors and has set itself up not just as a space to showcase brilliant art, but also a place for people to learn and socialise. In 2009, it was announced that Tate Modern was going to get a brand spanking new wing, which would help to spread out the art and all the millions of art lovers coming through the doors each year. Herzog & de Meuron came back on board, and the development of the Switch House began. The idea wasn't to create a new gallery, but to extend what's already there. Bridges have been installed to join the Switch House with the newly named Boiler House, Tate Modern's original building, so you can move freely across that central turbine hall to explore the Tate's collection as you please. The building is 10 stories high and located above the industrial concrete tanks of the old power station. Large spiralling staircases lead you from the dark depths of the tanks and up to several floors of bright exhibition spaces, on top of which the restaurant is located. On the 10th floor, you'll reach a viewing platform where the London horizon stretches out in front of you for miles. What used to make electricity now makes a buzz. We're going to begin today's show with the brains behind the building. That's Herzog and de Meuron. Last week, the doors to the Switch House opened and producer Holly headed down to get a first look. Whilst there, she met Askan Mergenthaler, senior partner at Herzog and de Meuron.
Starting point was the original building, the original Tate Modern with its turbine hall. And when we visited the turbine hall at that time in 95, just after the competition, already then we noticed the tanks and the potential of the tanks. And we were always hoping together with Nick Sirota that we could eventually transform them into spectacular art spaces. And so we were very lucky that we can do this now and that we were able to do that. So the tanks form the foundation for the extension. For us, it was also important that the extension clearly says I belong to the power station, you know, so that's why it's also clad in brick. And it was important for us that it will knit it back to the existing power station rather than being part of the commercial developments around.
And your company's worked on plenty of art projects in the past. What are the challenges of designing an art gallery?
We always put the collection and the people, the institution, and the foreground. So when we start working on museum projects, we look for a dialogue with the client and want to understand what is it what you want to achieve. How do you want to show the art? How do you want to engage with the visitor? And how can we help you in doing that? And I think that's for every museum a little bit different. And with Tate, I think Tate Modern, they're definitely the forerunners when it comes to this, and to also to understand what is a museum for modern art in the 21st century created a lot of very interesting dialogues and exchange with them while we were working on this project. And good architecture depends on a good client, and we definitely had a great client here for this one. And we met with them weekly and had intense debates, not only with Nick Sirota, but with everybody of the team. So for each area we have been working on, be it education or galleries, also the other people who are in charge of that came into the meeting, and we had a very intense exchange with them. What is important for them, what do they care about, and so on. And this is not just one discussion, this is an ongoing process, and often also trial and error, and you go back and forth and you try different things, and it's a long process. And I think in general it's important that you give these kind of buildings time to ripen, to be developed. It's not something you can develop just in a sketch. It really needs time to evolve and to grow.
And for you, now that the building's finished and you walk around, what's your favorite part of this building? What's the bit that you're most proud of?
I think it's the way you circulate through the building, which is very special. Beginning in the tanks, again, you know, like how you walk from the turbine hall into the tanks, you discover this underground world, this cavernous world, dark and raw and direct, and how you're then picked up by this broad concrete stair, bringing you up into the building, and then the journey continues. It's like an architectural promenade, it's like an interior street meandering through the building, connecting all the different galleries and levels and creating little spaces, little squares, little plazas. We sit in one of these right now, so I think that's very successful, and that's what we wanted to do, really a building people can occupy, can use, feel comfortable in, find their spot, offer a huge diversity of different possibilities, how to engage with the art, with the building, and so on. And I think that has been quite successful.
I think it does feel like a very social space, and I think it's important for an art gallery like this not to feel too imposing, because there's so many people that come in that don't necessarily know much about art. They want to come and learn. I guess it's going to be quite accessible. At the moment it's just the press preview, but in a few days there'll be the general public will be coming in. What for you will be the mark of success for this building?
When the people like being here, you know, and they come back and they get curious, and curiosity is important, you know. Hopefully they feel comfortable and safe, but also I think it would be great if they become curious and they want to learn more, they want to see more, and they are returning customers because the program is so diverse and so active that they constantly come back for performances, for film screenings, for shows, or just for meeting people and engaging with them. So I think that's the ultimate success of a building, when it really becomes a lively place, a place for the people, very social, as you say, very accessible. And I think that's what the museum has to be nowadays, you know.
That was Askan Mergenthaler, senior partner at Herzog & de Meuron, the architecture firm behind Tate Modern's brand new Switch House. Of course, it's not just all about the building, it's also about how you use it. Next up, we're going to hear from Matthew Gale, head of displays. He tells Holly how it feels to be presented with a whole new building to fill with art.
It's daunting, but also tremendously liberating. One of the things that we knew early on was that we wanted a variety of spaces, more various than were already present in the boiler house. In conversation with the architects, Nick and others were urging them to think in that way. And you see that in front of you. You have really tremendously dramatic large spaces, but also intimate spaces. And in particular, the two spaces of the oil tanks that are the residue of the power station, which are unlike any other spaces I know of, certainly, sort of the round, deep, impressive, raw spaces that we're able to adapt and put large, complicated works into.
And how does the conversation with the architects go? Do you work very closely with them yourself? Are you sort of following them around saying, oh, a couple more inches here, a couple more inches there, a bit more light in this room?
It's a parallel process. So the architects are responding to the brief from the client, and sometimes we're directly involved as people who work with the art, and at other times it's other parts of the organisation. It's not a straightforward thing, but it's a creative partnership between two big organisations.
When did you start planning what exactly was going to go into this building?
It's been a number of years planning it, and it evolves over time, so it's quite difficult to trace back to the original moment. There are certain things where you think, if we had more space, it would be great to show this, or if we had an appropriate space, it would be great to show this. And those things accumulate, and then as the opportunity emerges, so they become points around which other ideas gather. Sometimes those all get shunted out and you start again. In that sense, I suppose it's rather like a very complicated jigsaw puzzle, in which you may start in one corner and think, well, we can resolve all of this, and then find that you've had it the wrong way up.
When you finally decided what you wanted to put in, how did you decide which artist went in which room? How did you decide which ones to put in first?
The key underlying factor was to turn towards a much more international representation, which could reflect how the collection had been growing more internationally over the lifetime of Tate Modern, the last 16 years. So those two things go hand in hand, and it's important for us to make that evident at this crucial moment. We've also tried very hard, as you've probably heard in the speeches that were made today, to think about balancing gender and to think about the presence and or neglect of women artists over the last 100 years or so. That's an education for us, as well as how we present that to our public, to be thinking again about artists who may or may not have been neglected, who really need to be brought back into one of the many stories that we tell. And that's been a crucial element in how we're presenting things right now.
When you're hanging an exhibition that's going to be seen by so many hundreds of thousands of people, what do you have to take into consideration that you might not have to in a smaller gallery?
Well, that's quite a tricky thing to answer. I mean, I think there's a distinction, and it's probably a professional one, but there is a distinction between an exhibition and a collection display. The works that we have on display here have to be sustained for a much longer time. Mostly exhibitions last 3 or 4 months. Many of our collection displays will last a year, maybe longer. So that is a distinction which may determine how you display the works in different ways, how you protect them, how you think about the flow of visitors through the space, logistical things, you know, like parking your car. You have to think about issues that are attached to but are beside the art.
And how does it feel today to walk through the gallery and see everybody interacting with the pieces that you've hung here?
It's tremendously exciting to see people being excited. Of course, we've become a little bit used to it because we've had it set up for a number of weeks now. We're doing the final touches. But to see that response, and we really look forward to seeing the response of the young people who will come in on the 16th, is really what it's about. It's really rewarding, and to see how that excitement can be generated by people discovering new things.
Matthew Gale, head of displays at Tate Modern there. Time for a quick break, but when we come back, I'll be joined by the art newspaper's Jane Morris to discuss the success, or is it, of the Switch House. Stay tuned.
Meet the Writers is the show in which we have a chance to get intimate with some exciting authors. Airing at 1500 every Saturday and available as a podcast thereafter, it's an in-depth discussion about the life and work of a different writer every week, with me, Georgina Godwin, on Monocle 24.
We open the doors to none other than regular Monocle contributor Jane Morris. Jane, welcome to the programme. Now, lots have been said about the building itself, but I always feel that maybe the art gets forgotten when we talk about the new Tate Modern itself and the extension. How good a museum is it for showing art in its new extended format?
Oh, it's much better. I have to say that now I see the building with this extension added onto it, I prefer it much more. I always used to feel in the old days, now the problem is we start talking about the old Tate and the old Tate because of course there's the old Tate at Millbank,
yeah.
And the old Tate Modern. So the old Tate Modern, I think you were very conscious all the time as you were going along the galleries that you had the great big turbine hall on one side of you. So there was only really light on one side of the building. But now, because there are bridges going across the turbine hall to the new galleries, and you can see light across the bridges, you suddenly have much more of a sense of it's lighter. I mean, it's big, heavy concrete sort of structures.
Yeah.
But those dark interiors that I think a lot of people have complained about definitely feel better with this new extension. And I think you don't visit it as two museums with a turbine hall in the middle. I've definitely been going across the bridges, and I think logically you go from floor to floor across the bridges. So I think it works very well.
So it's got a different sort of sense of fluidity rather than being sort of stuck on one side of it. You're either in the turbine hall or you're stuck in a room and you don't quite know where you are. Is it an easier museum to kind of read and negotiate in that sense?
Well, I think so, but whether that's because I'm so familiar with the museum, I'm not sure. I certainly thought it was easier to read than I expected it to be. And also the galleries have quite different feels as well. The new spaces are clearly much more flexible. So I think they can pretty much put the walls where they like.
Yeah.
Whereas the Tate Modern, old Tate Modern, had a very sort of structured, I think they used to call it the enfilade, a very structured run of galleries that couldn't be changed. So I think the Tate now has got sort of the best of both worlds. It's got very flexible, it's got very classical, and it's a very nice visitor experience. Also, of course, the old Tate Modern was intended for 2 million people, and they got 5 almost immediately. Now, they expected that to fade away, but in reality, it didn't. Mm. So as a result, the public spaces have always been a bit of a scrum. And I have to be honest, I think things like the loos and the cafe have always been not great. This will make a huge improvement. There's a lot of public space in the new building. So I think that finally, I hope, the toilet cafe getting up and down the stairs problem is hopefully resolved.
There was a bit of a criticism before it opened that it was going to be a space kind of designed almost exclusively for school trips or for having lunch or for looking out across the, you know, the great panorama of London rather than for displaying art. I know you spent more time in the art galleries than in the cafes.
I spent all my time in the art galleries.
How dare you?
To show my worthy credentials.
Exactly. But I wonder if it does feel actually that it's come out, the art has come out on top here rather than the catering.
Well, I would say definitely. As I say, I think this is greatly improved for showing the art. What they've done effectively is there's really 8 permanent exhibitions. They flow one from the other. And if you start at the beginning, which would be the in the studio display, mm-hmm. if you start and follow the order logically, as in the guide, it does all make sense. Having said that, it is really 8 quite significant exhibitions. And I certainly felt that each one of them would repay spending 2 or 3 hours just looking at each exhibition. They've packed an awful lot into each one of them. I don't mean they've packed tons and tons of work in. The way they've displayed them at the galleries, I think, looks beautiful. But there is a lot to think about and read. And probably because what they've done, famously the last exhibitions at Tate Modern were thematic. Mm. And there was always a slight suspicion that that was really because the Tate does not have a really great early 20th century French collection. And it doesn't have a really fantastic mid-century American collection. So it can't really compare with the Pompidou or MoMA. And Nick Serota freely admits that. Yeah. So there was always a suspicion that it didn't tell a classic art history because it sort of couldn't. What I think is very interesting with this set of displays, which, again, this has been sort of widely written about, the whole way they're thinking about art history, I think, has changed. So what they've done is they've made thematic displays, but there is a chronology within them. So most of the displays in the old Tate Modern are pre-1960. Most of the objects in the Switch House are post-1960, but not exclusively. But there are far more works by women, and there are far more works by artists who are not from America or Western Europe. And I think this was a very, very deliberate strategy. This is not because they've got holes in their collection. This is because I think they want to tell a different story of 20th and 21st century modern and contemporary art.
Does this take them out of competition with the Pompidou and the MoMA? Or is this more of an organic idea of, do you know what? You know, there's a conversation that these two pieces of work are having, that these two artists are having. This person came before this person, but they also knew this person. They can tell a little bit less of that Tate Modern, especially in its new form, can tell less of a didactic story and be more of a suggestive place.
I think that's hard to say. I can't really tell because I'm so ingrained with that traditional story of the canon. For me, I found it very easy to read. I saw lots and lots of work by artists. I either didn't really know the artist or I've heard of the artist, but I've never really seen the work. I found the way that artists have been juxtaposed makes a huge amount of sense. I mean, in the Surrealism galleries, there are works by Dorothea Tanning. There are works by Egyptian artists and I think Lebanese artists whose work I didn't know. But to me, it all fitted together into a very logical whole. And I didn't go around thinking, oh, this has been done for reasons of tokenism. I went around thinking, this is my lack of knowledge. And it's really exciting that they have brought these artists to our attention. What I can't tell is how easy it will be for people who don't know the
casual
canon.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that the labelling is really excellent. I don't know who writes their label. Well, I'm sure it's a group effort, but somebody at the end of the day must have editorial control over the wall labels, the captions on the paintings, and the room guides. There are no room guides at the moment for these shows. I presume one will come. But at the moment, it makes a very, very logical story. And I think they've tried very hard to be actually quite didactic. I mean, if anything, I would say there is still a very strong Tate feel over the whole display. Right. It is all quite cool, a little bit intellectual, even if visually it's quite exciting.
Well, we can't really leave this conversation without mentioning Nick Sirota. You mentioned him in one of your answers, Jane. I mean, he's been the head honcho since the early 90s, I guess, and it's so much behind this, and there's so much behind the expansion. Can you see his fingerprints? I mean, he's a tough chap. He's quite a tough interview. He's an amazing fundraiser. Can you see his fingerprints on this new thing? What are the traits of Nicholas Sirota that you see in this new Tate?
Well, he's also quite self-effacing. And since I've never actually worked with him, it is very hard to know what's him and what's other people. I would actually say that the collection display is very much the work of Francis Morris. Mm. Francis Morris has been responsible for building acquisition committees. I think there's seven of them, which since 2000 have been working on collecting work. Well, not just non-Western work, because there's an American committee as well, but basically work outside Britain. And she has definitely, I think, been a driving force behind the inclusion of a lot more women and a lot more, as I say, non-Western artists. Nicholas Sirota said to me, I think, 20 years ago? It was quite a long time ago. He actually said to me about 20 years ago that one of the missions of the Tate would be to show work from a much wider range of countries. So he was clearly thinking that. Nonetheless, as I say, I think we see quite a lot of the hand of Francis Morris, but they have worked really, really closely. They started together in 1988, so I'm not quite sure how much we can separate them.
Yes,
to be honest.
Two of them. They're a great great double act.
I think so, but I think there's definitely something about, I mean, Nick Sirota has always favoured Herzog de Meuron. There is definitely a kind of cool, minimal, concrete style to the place, which I suspect is his taste. I could be wrong, but I suspect is his taste. I mean, he's always very secretive about the art he likes, but clearly
maybe you go home and it's just full of, you know, his house is like Lawrence Llewellyn Bowen's. Who knows?
I feel it probably isn't. I feel at heart he really
our
loves
international listeners will have to Google him.
I feel at heart he basically likes American minimalism, amongst other things. I mean, he did bring people like Baselitz and Kiefer to London as well.
Yeah. And just finally then, we've sort of talked around the subject of putting this new Tate Modern into a pecking order. The Art newspaper publishes the results of the most visited museums in the world each year. That's a sort of unmissable piece of supplementary journalism that you guys do as well. Where does this rate? I mean, in terms of the pleasure of visiting this new and improved, larger Tate Modern, where do you put it? Well, what are your favourite museums to visit in the world and where would you put this one?
Well, I think at the moment, and this makes me sound slightly patriotic and jingoistic, but at the moment, I think this is an absolute must-see museum. As I say, it needs to be seen in parallel with some of the other great museums. I've sadly not yet seen the new San Francisco Museum of Modern Art, which is apparently fantastic. You would still need to see the Pompidou and MoMA to get the other big bits of the story. But I think what the Tate has done, as I say, by widening the canon of modern art so greatly, I think has put it somewhat ahead of most of the other big players, at least for the time being.
We doff our cap then to Sir Nicholas Sirota and Francis Morris.
I think we do.
Jane, thank you very much as ever. We've touched on what's within the walls of the new Tate, but to finish the show, let's go into a little bit more detail. Mark Godfrey is Senior Curator for International Art at Tate Modern, and he tells us who's hanging in the Switch House's inaugural shows.
What we wanted to do in the collection displays is really look at art being made around the world. There are some incredible room installations of really important works by women like Magdalena Abakanowicz, a Polish artist. These huge bulbous forms made with canvas and sacking material. That's in one of the rooms in the boiler house, the older parts of the building. A brilliant film by the Japanese German artist Hito Steirl, who deals with the condition of invisibility in the contemporary world and how one might hide in a world where, you know, a drone camera can spy you, or, you know, where Google Maps takes place and so on. Other really significant works include the fantastic Louise Bourgeois installation in the Switch House, work from the Artist Rooms collection, amazing collection of late sculptures which are hanging from the ceiling, or one of her spiders, in fact two of her spiders. And then there are works by important works by women throughout all the group displays. A sculpture by the American artist Ronnie Horn, a huge pink glass block weighing 6 tons that's positioned near a window and that comes alive when the light of the sun shines into it. And elsewhere in that display, this is on the second floor, you have important works from the 1960s by Charlotte Posanenska, German artist working in Frankfurt, who was taking everyday things like the units from air conditioning systems, but allowing people to build sculptures out of them. I installed that work, and it's one of the most fun works to install because it comes in units, but the curators have to decide how to assemble them. It's a bit like having a load of Lego blocks, and you can make your own shape with it. Just clicks together. All the curators at Tate Modern sit on a team which looks after the displays, and the senior curators and curators and assistant curators, we meet every 2 weeks. We looked at the plans for, you know, the whole building and thinking very carefully about coherent thematic groups across each floor, about the difference between the Switch House and the Boiler House, about the necessity to include in the displays equal numbers of women and men and artists from across the world. And then there was a long process of installing the works in the galleries that was really exciting. And of course, installing in any new building brings its challenges, fixing works to the ceiling or laying works on the floor. But everything's ready and is on time and looks, I think, very beautiful.
Mark Godfrey, Senior Curator for International Art at Tate Modern there, bringing us to the end of today's show. The Switch House is up and running at Tate Modern and well worth a visit for Londoners and visitors alike. And that brings us to the end of today's show. You've been listening to Culture. My producer was Holly Fisher. Join me again at the same time next week. But for the time being, I've been Robert Bounds, and thank you very much for tuning in.